It is Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk our state's history. It began May 25, 1961, when President John F. Kennedy issued this challenge.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish.
It was difficult, it was expensive, but the challenge was met 8 years later on July 16, 1969, with the launch of the first manned mission to the moon, Apollo 11.
Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins rode that Saturn V rocket into space. 4 days later, July 20th, Armstrong and Aldrin carefully piloted the lunar module Eagle onto the lunar surface.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility, we copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
And then came man's first footstep on the moon. Here's Walter Cronkite covering that historic moment for CBS.
There he is. There's a foot coming down the steps. Armstrong is on the moon. Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon. On this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Today on Stateside, we mark this 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. We're going to find out how that moon landing inspired Michigander Jerry Lininger to become an astronaut. He'll talk about living and working in space. But first, a Michigan connection to that long effort that led to the U.S. space program. Did you know that as early as 1933, Willard Dow and the Dow Chemical Company were already working on early space travel and research? Joining us now to tell us about this very early entry into the space race is education specialist with the Michigan History Center, Rachel Clark. So, Rachel, everyone knows about the 1960s space race and certainly the eventual moon landing and walk. Tell us how Willard Dow got involved in space research in 1933. Was it really outer space?
It wasn't quite outer space, but it was as close as we had gotten at that point. So in 1933, or in the early 30s, Willard Dow had taken over Dow Company. And prior to that, in the late 1890s, Herbert Dow had been kind of looking into magnesium alloys. And Willard sort of continued that. So in 1933, the University of Chicago, they were very interested in studying cosmic rays in outer space. They knew that they were there, but not much else about them. And they wanted to get into the stratosphere, which the stratosphere is quite, it sounds really huge, but it goes up from about 30,000 feet to about 165,000 feet.
No, 1933, that was huge.
That is huge. So they wanted to get up into the stratosphere to study those rays. And they wanted to go up in a balloon gondola and take them into the stratosphere. And they approached Dow with this idea.
So what did Dow do? What was the role in the research?
So they had been working on this magnesium alloy that had been developed and called Dow metal. And that came out in the early 1900s, actually 1916, I believe. And people were sort of meh. Companies weren't really interested in it because you had aluminum that was already being used. It was already being produced. So why switch to something else? And so Dow had this magnesium alloy that they had been developing and looking for a use for it. And when the University of Chicago approached them, they already sort of had this material that they were very interested in trying out as Dow metal. So Willard Dow put a team together to start building this gondola.
And what was the whole point? Where was the gondola going to be used? What kind of flight was it supposed to have?
The gondola was going to be attached to a balloon to go up into the stratosphere, and then they would use instruments to study, again, the cosmic rays that were in outer space, or they were going to try to. They really I don't know that they, I'm not a scientist, clearly.
Sure.
I don't know what they thought they were going to be able to do.
But the World's
but
Fair
they
was involved.
There.
The World's
it
Fair.
It was.
Yeah.
They tied the introduction of this to the World's Fair. So what they ended up doing was finishing it. The gondola was finished in late spring of 1933. And in June, it was shipped actually to Akron, Ohio. It was going to be attached to a balloon that Goodyear was making for the gondola. It toured five cities between Midland and Akron. And then it was moving on to the Century of Progress Fair in Chicago, where it was going to be launched. So there's all sorts of sort of this really huge display of this, and the Chicago World's Fair was where it was going to be.
So much attention paid to that World's Fair that year in Chicago. So was this going to be an unmanned flight, or was someone going up in this gondola?
They were going to be manned. Originally, it was going to be a gentleman named Jean Picard. He was a University of Chicago scientist, along with a Navy pilot. But at the last minute, Picard decided to give up his seat because he wanted as little weight in the gondola as possible. So he gave up his seat, and it was just the Navy pilot that went up.
So off it went, to 3 a.m. on August 5th, 1933. How did the flight go?
It didn't go great. It went up. It launched. 25,000 people were watching the balloon launch. It got up to about 5,000 feet, and then it crashed. The initial flight wasn't as successful as everyone was hoping, but it wasn't considered really a failure. So they sort of went back to the drawing board and started again and gave it another couple shots.
And we should probably clarify, how did the Navy commander fare?
He was okay. Everyone was fine. There were no injuries. The gondola survived. It was actually in really good shape, which says a lot. You know, if you're in a plummet to the earth from 5,000 feet, then obviously this Dow metal, it stood that that impact. And so that says a lot about the Dow metal. The fact that the pilot was unharmed, I think he had a couple bumps and bruises, but then the gondola also survived. So that's why, although the flight didn't succeed, and it did crash back down to the earth, it was a success.
It was a crash test. And exactly how high did it get?
It got up to about 5,000 feet.
So as you say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Mm-hmm. And they did. How did it go in subsequent flights?
So they go up a couple more times. 1934, they get up to about 61,000 feet. So they redesign everything and get up there. And then in 35, they do it again. This time they just want to study the stratosphere. They're moving their focus, and they actually get up to about 72,400 feet in that flight. That is also Navy pilots that are manning the gondola and the balloon, and those are considered very successful and actually lead to Dow to helping with war production 6 years later as the United States gets into World War II.
But you stop and you think that these early pilots aboard this gondola built with Dow metal, they are the forefathers of the Mercury astronauts, the Apollo astronauts, and onward.
They are. They're the first really sort of big test pilots that you're seeing that are becoming part of that program.
The story of Michigan's early role in the very, very early stages of the space race. Thanks to Rachel Clark from the Michigan History Center. Rachel, thanks so much.
Thank you.